Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you downloaded us. This is the B segment. The bees are always wonderful guests, and we have someone for you today who fits that bill perfectly. Amanda Talley is the CEO and president of the Tourette Association of America. We're going to find out how she got into this field and what Tourette syndrome is and why this is such an important item and interview to talk about. As usual, we are brought to you by MyPersona.com or Persona Nutrition. Yes, you can get supplements and vitamins personalized just to you, to your diet, to your lifestyle, to your habits, to your conditions. Take the free online assessment. It's absolutely free at MyPersona.com. It's actually fun to take. And you can talk to a nutritionist for free. And you can find out if you need anything or don't need anything. They'll tell you right away. They just want to make sure you get what you need. That's at MyPersona.com. MyPersona.com. Now let's go back to the interview with Amanda Talty, T-A-L-T-Y, and her website for this is Tourette.org. And Tourette is not easy to spell. T-O-U-R-E-T-T-E is the spelling of it, Tourette.org. Amanda, thank you very much for coming on. How'd you happen to get involved in the Tourette syndrome?
So I came to the Tourette Association of America. I had been approached for a position back in 2016, and upon learning more about the condition, you know, mental health broadly is an area of interest to me because there are members of my family who have various conditions. So when I became more aware and educated about Tourette syndrome as a condition, some of the overlaps as it related to, you know, family impacts, sort of lack of proper supports, you know, really needing to do a lot of self-advocacy and education, you know, all of that rang true from experiences with my family. So it made sense for me to join the organization, the only national organization that advocates for this community, to really ensure that it would be sustainable into the future and, you know, really serve the needs of this community.
And what is Tourette syndrome?
Well, for starters, it's not the cursing disease. So I want to say that first and foremost, because I think the media has historically sensationalized coprolalia, which is the symptom of Tourette that's really characterized by inappropriate statements, utterance of words, etc. It's actually a lot more nuanced than that. Tourette syndrome is a neurodevelopmental disorder, which is characterized by uncontrollable motor and vocal tics. So about 1 million people nationally live with Tourette syndrome or a tic disorder, and about half of them are going undiagnosed, which is, you know, a really staggering statistic if you think about what it means in the life of a child. You know, most people do begin to develop symptoms between the ages of, you know, 5 and 7. And if it goes undiagnosed, you know, those are really the formative years of a child's life. So it's important that we, you know, get the word out about what it is and more importantly, what it's not.
And when you say get the word out, so part of what your organization does is have a place for people to go when to get help, that is, to get advice and to find a community. What do you mean in addition to get the word out? How do you get families and even pediatricians to be more aware of this?
So a lot of our work, a lot of the public education work that we do is in partnership with the CDC. So we offer webinars, we go to hospitals and do grand rounds. You know, we do a lot of work with educators. We have an educational specialist on staff. And really all of these programs are geared to elevating knowledge about the condition for those that are the most likely people besides the caregivers to come in contact with a child. People who live with Tourette syndrome, about 80% of them also have a co-occurring condition, most usually ADHD or OCD, and there is some overlay with autism. So, you know, if you're in a classroom environment, as an example, and you're seeing a child who's having behavioral issues or what appear to be behavioral issues, or if they already have a diagnosis of ADHD and then you begin to notice, uncontrollable movements or sounds that the child is not taking ownership of because they may not even realize that they're doing it, right? For an educator in a classroom to be aware of what Tourette syndrome is as a condition can really go a long way in making sure that child gets the services they need and the accommodations they need in the classroom. So we do a lot of broad reaching programming. We have actually one of the big things that we're doing, coming up is our conference. So it is a virtual conference this year. It will be online. It's entirely free to the community. We are also offering CEUs for physicians and other practitioners as a part of this conference. And it's a 3-day event where we're really looking to provide a variety, and we are providing a variety of web-based sessions that are geared to adults, parents, teens, educators, and medical professionals. And that's just one small sampling of the programming that we do, all year long.
Now, you say that 50% of the people with Tourette, or I assume children with Tourette, but are unaware. How is that possible when when the tic is pretty observable? Are the parents unaware? Are they in denial? Or is it so small that it doesn't seem to be unusual?
Well, what we understand is it could be a couple of different things. So first, Tourette syndrome is a lifelong condition. So while it manifests in childhood, that's typically the onset of it is in the childhood years. It is a lifelong condition. I think that there are a variety of factors that lead to that, failure to diagnose the 50%. I think some of it is just a fundamental misunderstanding of what Tourette is. First and foremost. I also think that, a lot of children who have Tourette syndrome, and we know this is the case for children who have been diagnosed, often they are seen as a disciplinary problem. Their diagnosis is not being accepted many times by educators in the classroom, sometimes even by their families. So depending on your community and depending on your access, your ability to access quality, knowledgeable care, even if a parent sees a behavior, it may look deliberate. It may seem intentional even when it's not. So I think it's really the failure to understand the nuance of the condition, to understand that, that tics can be as mild as blinking and as severe as being self-injurious. And depending on the knowledge base of the support system and the access to knowledgeable people, it can be very kind of hard to get that official diagnosis. And the other myth that was very pervasive for a very long time and research is now telling us is not so true anymore, is that you'll grow out of it. Children will grow out of it. And we know we now have research that shows that about 2/3 of all people who have symptoms and have Tourette syndrome, visible symptoms as a child, will go on in their adult life to also have visible symptoms. So we're still learning a lot. And I think that's part of the wall we have to get over.
Now, you say, I take it from what you've said, since people have persistence, there's no cure. Is there a known pathway in the brain for it? Is there a known disturbance of the nervous system? Or are we still trying to do research to find the etiology? And is there any treatment for it, if you will, medical treatment for it?
So in terms of a specific cause, that we don't know. We do know that there are some genes that have been identified as playing a role in Tourette syndrome, but we also understand that the genetic construct of the condition is more like eye color and hair color. So it's not a singular gene. It's many genes that come together to then, you know, manifest in this condition. So that we know. In terms of where in the brain it sits, there is still a lot of research that has to occur. There have been imaging studies that do show some differences between the gray and the white matter of the brain, between those with TS and those without. So I think we are moving to a place where we will one day be better able to identify Tourette syndrome in these very medically procedural ways. That could also lend itself to a personalized medicine going forward. But right now, where we are is it's truly kind of wait and see. It's, you know, trying different things because the condition looks different in every person. You know, not everybody has the same tics or even the same severity of tics. And then you add on top of that any of the co-occurring conditions like ADHD or OCD, it is sort of a complex web to get the right treatment. It's really a lot of try, wait, and see as it relates to medicinal treatments. And then we also do, and this was something that the Tourette Association had a very large hand in developing, there is a behavioral therapy. So comprehensive behavioral intervention for tics is a behavioral non-medicinal therapy that has been recommended by the American Academy of Neurology as a first-line treatment for children when they are diagnosed. So we have seen that has been very helpful, particularly in children, because of the elasticity of their brain. And with practice, you know, they're really able to work on the habit reversal elements that are part of that therapy and really teaching and training themselves to identify the premonitory urge and then counterbalance whatever the most intrusive tic that they have is. So that has proven helpful, but, you know, again, it really is hit or miss in terms of the therapy. So one of
is the mission of the Tourette Association at Tourette T. Tourette.org. Is it to do research to uncover the cause? Is it to educate? Does it raise funds for a multitude of things?
So our mission is a three-pillar mission. One of our pillars is research. So we do have a grant funding program where we try to get the best and the brightest researchers into the Tourette field to really help us better understand the condition through research. You know, the second pillar of our mission is support. So through our network of 32 chapters and over 100 support groups at this point throughout the country, we really want to provide that boots on the ground assistance to people in their community where they live, where they work. So we have that, you know, wide reaching network, which is largely volunteer based and volunteer driven. And then the third pillar of our mission is the awareness component, which is where, you know, being on this podcast falls right into that. What we really try to do is get the word out to the public to, once again, educate them on what Tourette syndrome is and what it isn't, but also, you know, raise awareness within the Tourette community that there are resources available. And, you know, as new therapies and new information comes out, you know, we want to make sure that people in the community have immediate access to those sorts of resources so that they can take it with them. We have a series of toolkits designed specifically for different audiences, educators, physicians, you know, the patient's family, law enforcement. That's been a big one, particularly over the last year with COVID and, you know, the exacerbation of symptoms for many in the population because of the stress associated with it, as well as the stigma that if you have a coughing tic or a sneezing tic during the pandemic, you know, the complication that can bring in your day-to-day life. So we've developed some resources and tools for that as well. So we really are what I'll call a full-service advocacy organization for the community because, you know, again, we do partner with the CDC as well to really work with them on their Tourette Health and Education program to make sure that we are identifying need in the community and we are filling that gap.
Now, you say most of the tics develop between ages 5 and 7. Can people who are elderly develop this as well, or is it almost exclusively start in childhood, and does it get worse? Does it generally get better? As you said, about a third of them go away as you reach adulthood, but do a third of them get worse and a third of them stay the same? Or what's the split on this?
Symptoms begin to be identified between the ages of 5 and 7. So, and it may be as simple as a tick. What we find is that symptoms tend to get worse during adolescence, you know, as the body changes. I think as, you know, just the stress of being a teenager as well, when all of that kind of kicks in, you know, there is sort of this arc that happens that the tics tend to get worse. And then for most people, tics, they kind of taper off in late teens, you know, early adulthood. But what we understand to be true, and some of this is anecdotal because there's still a lot more research to be done, you know, we do know that depending on milestones in life that can occur, you know, different life stressors, you know, there are adults in the community who may have gone, you know, years without having tics that are interfering with their daily life, right? I mean, because I'll say I've never met an adult once that didn't say, oh, well, you know, I used to have Tourette syndrome and now only my wife notices when I tic, right? So most people in the community, even if they've quote unquote grown out of it, they still do have tics, but they're not outwardly noticeable. They're not interfering with their lifestyle. But we do know from a lot of people that life stressors, and as they go through the ebb and flow of life and get older, you know, the tics do tend to wax and wane. What that's about, though, what's causing that, you know, we just don't know. Again, the research around adults and really how many people are going into adulthood with, you know, mild, moderate, severe tics, even that research only came out within the last 5 years. So there's still a lot more that we have to learn. And that's really one of our goals at the TAA is to, you know, continue to push for that kind of work to be done and to push to really explore further the true impact living with this chronic condition has on not only the individual, but also, you know, everyone in their family, all the people around them.
We've been talking with Amanda Talty, and Amanda, correct me if I'm mispronouncing your name. I apologize for that if I am. She is the CEO of the Tourette Association of America. It is Tourette.org, Tourette.org. And of course, like most organizations, they can always use more funding to help with what they do, both in research and their important service commitments to people with the disease. I've learned a lot that it is much more common than I thought, 1 million people living with it, that we don't know the etiology, that it often has comorbidities such as ADHD, and other mental health needs, or OCD is another thing, and that it often gets less serious after you go through a more serious period of the teenage years. And by the way, if I didn't mention it, it's Tourette.org, Tourette.org. We, as usual, are brought to you by Persona Nutrition. You can go to their website, mypersona.com. Take the free online assessment to find vitamins and supplements personalized just to you, to what you do, what you eat, what your activities are, your conditions. Mypersona.com. And if you don't need anything, they'll tell you that. You can speak to a nutritionist for free as well at mypersona.com. And it's a fun, free online assessment. This has been Dr. Mike Roizen. We have to thank Caitlin for great engineering, Amanda Talty for being with us and talking to us, educating us, and myself included, about the Tourette syndrome and the latest research. And you especially, you're what motivates us. Thank you for downloading us. Do tell your neighbors about us. This is 1045B, so we've been doing it more than 20 years and greatly appreciate your support and interest. You'll want to listen to the A segment this week because I gave my take on what's going to happen with COVID 19 or SARS-CoV-2, as far as will we be living with it for a long while? The answer is probably yes, because we and the rest of the world won't get herd immunity, and it is a intermediate incubation period disease, meaning the flu we live with every year, try and get treatments for it, even with vaccination, it comes and presents and goes to other people because it's a very short incubation, 2 days. Measles, when everyone gets vaccinated, it's an 18-day or 16-day, 20-day incubation period. So your bacteria, your antibodies can go and fight it if you've been vaccinated. So you won't get the disease, won't spread it, won't get the consequences of it. This is an intermediate disease, so we've got to really work to get everyone to get herd immunity and vaccinated. But more on that and my take on that, as well as the latest non-COVID medical news of the week on the A segment, 1045A. Thanks again for listening, for downloading us, for telling your friends about us. We'll be back next week.